The Free for All Roundtable.
Round two.
On round two, let's say good morning to Sunira Chaudhry, employment lawyer at Workley Law. Robert Benzie is the Queen's Park Bureau Chief for the Toronto Star. Richard Krause is the host of Last Call with Richard Krause, the podcast. Nice to have you all. And let's start with the aftermath, and there is much of it, of the Umar Zamir affair. I guess we could start with the idea, Robin Urbach proposing in the Globe and Mail this morning, that the chief of police should be fired. Let me start with Richard Krause. I think that's a bit extreme. I think he has to explain himself, but I don't think this is fireable.
I don't think it's fireable. It was ill-advised. It was not the kind of thing you want to say to reinforce the belief that, you know, the police are here to make sure that justice is done and justice is served and that everyone can get a free and open trial. When you start saying, well, this isn't the verdict that I wanted, it suggests that, you know, the 12 people on the jury got it wrong, even though in this case, the system worked perfectly. So it was a really ill-advised thing to say, but I think he kind of walked it back a little bit in the press release that was released just after 5 o'clock yesterday about the OPP investigation into the conduct of the police. There's a couple of paragraphs near the bottom of that that suggest that while he didn't walk it back, he didn't say I'm sorry anywhere, but he seems to have softened that position and walked it back a little bit. It softened his position because I think he knew he was taking heat for this.
Okay, let's listen to what he said. This is immediately after the verdict was rendered. He was on his way out of the courthouse and he said this.
While we respect the judicial process and appreciate the work of everyone involved in this very difficult case, I share the feelings of our members who were hoping for a different outcome.
Okay, Robert Benzie, I think it was kind of a careless remark. It wasn't the kind of thing that I would have, if I'd been there, said, oh my God, I can't believe he said that.
Yeah, I mean, it was careless and reckless and maybe said in the heat of the moment, but the chief of police's loyalty is not to his members, it is to the city he serves and to the justice system. And the reason that Mr. Zamir got bail, which was quite controversial, and we'll talk about it later, I expect all the politicians weighing in on it in 2021, is because the case was so wafer thin against him. And the former interim chief, James Reimer, it kind of got the ball rolling by saying that this was an intentional hit on this undercover police officer, when of course it was not. And I mean, I just thought that the chief should not have said that. I agree with Richard that I think he's trying to wiggle his way back, but he undermined his credibility a great deal. And I Robin's column is harsh, but you know what? It's not totally uncalled for. I thought she made some very good points about what his job actually is.
Yeah, Sunira, I am entirely in line with a lot of things she said, right up to the conclusion where she says this is disqualifying. And I believe, I don't know, maybe I'm too lenient. I believe in second chances.
Yeah, John, I think it's extreme, but it's meant to be, because I think it does give all of us a moment to pause here. Why? Because what did we hear that came out of this trial? What we heard that came out was that there's going to be an investigation into the testimony of police officers because it appears as though, I mean, we have the judge who presided over this trial saying there's a possibility, there's a hint of collusion here. And so this is a moment for all police to step back and think about how they presented themselves at this trial. And of course, they need to look to leadership, which is the police chief. And if the police chief is coming out here standing behind members, as Benzie put it, rather than in the interest of justice, when I think that there is a huge elephant in the room, it's a glaring issue that the police now have to deal with respect to how this testimony rolled out. And whether or not we saw, you know, honesty in the courtroom, that's going to be a huge public interest issue going forward. And I don't think it's going to, you know, be swept under the rug all that quickly for Toronto police.
And Robert Benzie, you referred to this in your opening remarks, the fact that several political leaders came out and condemned the granting of bail to Zamir, and, you know, I, without reemphasizing too many times, I mean, I had heard what the real story was very early on, and I understood certainly why bail was granted. So, yeah, I think, you know, condemning the judge for granting bail in this particular case was a really bad move.
I agree, John. And like you, I talked to colleagues who were covering the story. So I knew there was a publication ban. So the public couldn't know why he was being granted bail. But the journalists who were covering it could. And I spoke to one of them and she told me, because I couldn't believe it either. I was very curious what was going on. But you know, Mayor Tory, then Mayor Tory, and Premier Ford and Mayor Brown in Brampton, they would have had the same kind of access to information that you and I had, John. So I think it was ill-advised. And I give the former mayor credit for at least owning it. We haven't really heard from the premier on this yet. So I don't know what Premier Ford's going to say when he's asked about, you know, did he rush to judgment? Clearly he did.
Sunira, maybe it's just better for politicians not to comment on criminal cases.
It's the nice thing about Canada, John, that, you know, the courts are or should be largely, you know, unpoliticized. Of course, in the U.S., you do have judges that are appointed by politicians. We don't have that in Canada. So, of course, one would expect that politics shouldn't be entering the courtroom. But, of course, politicians have to be very careful about using social media like Twitter to comment on first-degree murder charges, bails being granted. I mean, in this case, of course, I think in the defense of Premier Ford and then Mayor Tory, well, this is a first degree murder charge and a bail being granted, of course, for the public sentiment. I'm sure it was met with a lot of agreement in terms of their outcry. I mean, how do you charge somebody with first degree murder and then let them go home? Of course, there was a huge gap. And I think John Tory's comment recently with respect to his reflection on that comment, he did say he wished that there would be more transparency in terms of what the public could know, especially when bail would be granted in such a serious charge.
Yeah, Richard Krauss, I mean, John Tory says, I have learned from this experience. Mm-hmm. This is one of the reasons why I don't tend to pound the desk very often about things that happen in the judicial system. It's because I presume the judge actually knows what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, rushing to judgment is something that so many people do now. We're all expected to have a hot take on everything that happens and be an expert in the law, in pharmacy, in the efficacy of vaccines, in absolutely everything that happens. And if you don't say it in front of a microphone, you're supposed to say it on social media. And I think what this teaches us is that everyone needs to take a step back. Understand that we don't have all the facts right off the snap on everything, and watch what we say. And John Tory said as much in the statement that he released, and I agree with him. And I think it's important, not only for politicians, but for people in the media, for everyone, just to understand we don't always have all the facts, so don't shoot your mouth off too quickly.
A new psychiatric or psychological, I guess, study here in Ontario finds there is a link between people who like loud cars and psychopathy and sadism. Let me come back, actually, to Richard Krauss, because I mean, there's sort of a Fast and the Furious
a psychopathy
angle.
And sadism. Yeah,
no, there's a certain Fast and Furious aspect to this story.
Sure. I mean, listen, the idea of, I don't know about psychopathy and sadism, but certainly there's, you know, there's a power thing that goes along with having loud roaring cars whiz past you with heavy metal music, but that sort of thing that is exciting. And I don't know that I disagree. I don't know enough. I just said, let's be experts on everything. I'm not an expert in psychopathy or sadism, but I will say that when you go to a heavy metal concert, when you see, you know, those the you feel the rush of a race car whizzing past you, there's a dopamine hit that goes along with that that I think a lot of people find exciting, not just psychopaths and sadists.
Okay. Robert Benzi, are you persuaded by this study, or does it sort of stain the people who just like a loud car?
I think it's unfair to people who like loud cars. It's funny, this story, John, reminded me of that scene in the in the comedy Old School, where Will Ferrell is fixing his muscle car and his wife comes out and it's just revving really loud. And she says, "Wow, that's really loud." And he goes, "Thanks." He's like, really pleased that it's loud. There is a kind of adolescent kind of thrill that men, I guess, get from loud cars, Harley Davidson motorcycles, heavy metal music, punk rock, whatever. And I think Richard's right. There is a weird kind of visceral thing. I don't necessarily think it's a step toward being a psychotic, you know, killer or anything like that.
Yeah, Sunira, I would think it means you have an outward personality. I don't know if it means you're a sadist.
Yeah, no, I think, John, at least in the GTA, the only association I can make with loud cars is growing up in Vaughan. If you come from Vaughan or Woodbridge or somewhere in that area, there's a high correlation between loud cars and that neighborhood. I mean, going out for dessert or for a movie, coming home on the weekend, it's the one thing you're going to see in Vaughan almost every time you're up there.
Justin Trudeau has been claiming his government has cut cell phone bills in half. Robert Benzie, I'll start with you on this, and there's not a lot of time on the clock, so we may not be able to go all the way around. I haven't seen evidence of this on my bill, but I've heard from a whole bunch of people by text saying, no, I switched companies to a cheaper supplier, and it's great.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, we already in Canada paid among the highest cell phone costs of anywhere in the world. My daughter's going to university in Britain, and it is so much cheaper over there. I can't believe how much cheaper her phone is there than here, and she has way more things on it. But the problem with it is we paid so much. So for the Prime Minister to say, look, we've cut it in half, I'm not sure people actually will buy that, even if their bill is going down. They're so angry about everything else that's costing more money. I'm not really sure this is going to help him that much.
Okay, and Richard Krause, I have to imagine you practically live on your cell phone.
I kind of do, and I have not noticed that it's gone down at all, not 1 cent. If anything, my phone bill is more expensive than it used to be. So perhaps for someone else whose bill is halved, I've taken that half and put it on my bill, because that's more what it feels like to me.
Thank you all. Good to have you. Richard Krause, Sunira Chaudhry, and Robert Benzie.
Catch the round table, round one at 7:45, round two at 8:45. Weekday mornings on More in the Morning. News Talk 1010, Toronto.